Welcome to the Reiki Show, hosted by Bronwyn and Franz Diener of the International House of Reiki. Bronwyn and Franz teach Reiki around the globe and are the authors of the Reiki Sourcebook, the Japanese Art of Reiki, the Reiki Techniques card deck, and the soon-to-be-released A to Z of Reiki. The music you are listening to, Reiki Khan, is available at the International House of Reiki website, www.reiki.net.au. Hi, my name is Bronwyn.
And I'm Franz.
And today we have with us James Wells. Welcome, James.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Our pleasure. Now, James, you're a tarot consultant and a Reiki teacher and practitioner.
I am, in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
What we'd like to talk to you today about is the similarities between what you do, so between tarot and Reiki, the similar practices and principles that might lie beneath them, and any ideas that you have to help people supporting their Reiki practice. And if they're interested, you know, they could also include some different techniques into that from the tarot, because I understand you've got lots of ideas about that.
Oh, way too many ideas, as ever.
Great. Okay, well, could you just start off by telling us a wee bit about the history of tarot and the principles that lie at the base of it?
Sure. I'll give you a very basic background of tarot. It began as a trick-taking game, a lot like bridge, in Renaissance Italy, 15th century Italy in the north. It may also have been used to teach people certain truths about humanity's place in the cosmos, because certainly you had all these allegorical symbols. As time went on, people began to notice similarities between the structure of tarot. You know, there are four suits, so like four elements, four directions, four seasons, and so forth. And there are 22 trump cards representing big universal energies. And some people said, oh, there are 22 trump cards, there are 22 Hebrew letters, therefore it must be related to Hebrew letters and Kabbalah and so forth. And people began to use it as kind of a mnemonic system for remembering certain magical practices, calling on certain archangels, remembering certain colors, musical notes, and so forth that corresponded to these various spiritual beings, began to be used for divination, looking into ourselves and the life around us and, you know, what could be if we do this or if we don't do that. So using it as an insight tool, people began using it for rituals, for healing. In the modern era, it's been used a lot for journaling, creative brainstorming. I've even seen people choreograph dances with it, write novels based on it, write poetry based on it. So, you know, it certainly has grown up and is no longer, you know, the minion of fortune-telling parlors like is often in the public consciousness. It really is a holistic system for living. You know, each suit corresponds to a different part of our life. You know, the wands with the element of fire can be our spirit and our will and our identity. The suit of cups, which is the element of water, could be our feelings, our relating with others, our unconscious, the deep part of ourself. The suit of swords, which is the element of air, can be our mind, communication, ideas, community, thoughts, getting thoughts across, philosophy. And the suit of pentacles or coins, which is the element of earth, can be very tangible things like the body, physical health, money, work, skills, talents, feeling grounded and centered and secure. And then all those trump cards can represent the various spiritual and psychological lessons that we go through in a lifetime. So there's a bit of a quick background and structure of it. And we often refer to the major arcana and the minor arcana. Those trump cards are sometimes called the major arcana, meaning the big mysteries or the big vessels of mystery. And the minor arcana being the suit cards, the four suits containing 10 number cards and four court cards, and minor arcana just meaning the little mysteries, the little containers of life. So I like to think of the majors or the trumps being the what of life, the big universal what, and the minor arcana being the how. You know, how might we live those out in the various aspects of our life? And how do I use it? Mostly as a tool for insight. I don't believe in one future. I refer to my work as choice-centered, meaning that our choices and our actions in each present moment influence and create our future. I refer to my work as inquiry-based. That is, I'm more interested in the questions. You know, so many tarot consultants or readers get caught up in wanting to be right, wanting to provide the right answers. I'm more concerned with having the person who comes to me ask the right questions, you know, digging in through open-ended questions, creating a dialogue with their source of wisdom through the language that we're calling tarot. So asking things beginning with how or what or why or where in my life and so forth. I also refer to my work as enjoyable, because I think self-discovery doesn't have to be sour and very serious all the time. And certainly, as I mentioned in the history part, tarot began as a game in northern Italy. And if we, you know, treat self-discovery as a little bit of a game, it's a game of what if. What if I am this? What if I try this? What could be? Then we let our guard down a little bit. And when we let our guard down, more insight can come through. Plus, it's a little bit about the way that I like to work. With the tarot, anyway.
You talked about innate wisdom. How do you see that in conjunction with the tarot cards and the system of Reiki?
For one thing, I believe the system of Reiki is all about becoming who we really are. You know, it's not, as is so often touted, it's not, for me, a clinical thing in which, you know, you come in and get zapped and bang, you're done. For me, it's very much about an unfolding of that innate wisdom, that innate core of who you are. And through self-treatment, hands-on treatment on self, receiving treatments from others, doing the traditional meditations, living out the Gokai, the five precepts, it's all about becoming that true person that we are at our center. And that's the true person that I believe also informs us during a tarot consultation, that innate real self, whether you want to call it higher self, deeper self, younger self, unconscious, the soul, whatever you choose to call it. That's how I basically see the two systems coming together, in that it's all about unearthing who you really are and contributing that real essence to the world in some way that's going to be constructive to the world.
So in one way you see both the tarot and Reiki as a tool to connect to that inner wisdom.
Absolutely, and peel off the layers of who you aren't. You know, often use the tarot. We often, many of my clients come in and we look at, you know, what's not appropriate for me to be or do, or, you know, what is appropriate for me to be or do, and what's at the core of this, and so forth. And certainly in my Reiki classes, I emphasize to them that there's sort of a peeling away that goes on as we work more consciously with the key, and as we work more consciously to live the Gokai, and as we practice things like Hatsure Ho and hands-on healing and receiving Reju regularly, it all helps to dissolve the illusion of who we thought we were or who other people thought we were, and become who we really are.
So if you're looking at this similar foundation between tarot and Reiki, how do you then, I know you have some techniques, how do you actually bring them together practice-wise?
Oh, cool, yeah, let's talk about that. I've got a whole bunch of things we can do, and certainly a bunch of things that I do. For one thing, how would I use tarot in conjunction with Reiki? A couple of ways might be, if I'm teaching a weekend class on the Friday evening, I might pull a card on behalf of the class to answer the question, you know, what energy or theme unites this group this weekend? And then I might say a little bit about it and pass the card around the group and have people just tell a story about the picture in the card. And then we piece that all together to create some kind of theme that unites us that weekend. So it really is a great kind of community building exercise, because suddenly people are talking about these images. And then at the end, we pull it back to us. So, you know, we're keeping it out there. We're keeping it objective, as objective as possible through the tarot image. And then we bring it back to our theme and then bring that theme back to us. And that really makes a sense of cohesion to our weekend community. And certainly at the end of a weekend class, I might ask something like, what gift do we take out into the world with us after this Reiki weekend? And pull a card for that, and we'll talk about that. And we've come up with some really beautiful insights, and I certainly had some emails from people in my last level one class saying that how much they felt that supported their Reiki weekend, actually. At the end of a private Reiki session, if I'm doing a treatment offering key to the person's body and mind, Some people like to pull a card at the end, knowing that I do tarot, and I encourage them to ask an open-ended question, something like, how can I best support my healing over the next whatever time frame they decide on? And then we brainstorm with the card to kind of come up with constructive and simple ways that they can support their wellness, or maybe until their next visit or until whatever they choose to do next. So that's one way I might incorporate it into Reiki. Something else that Reiki practitioners could certainly do is either with a tarot deck or your Reiki Techniques card deck, which I love, by the way, to support their Reiki practice. Pardon me?
Good plug.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can use either a tarot card and or a Reiki Techniques card deck card to support their practice by just simply drawing a card a day. I was on a podcast recently and a woman, Portland, Oregon, and we were talking about the card a day practice, you know, using a card for your focus for the day. And certainly you can do this to support your Reiki practice. You can ask very specific questions and then pull a card, you know, questions like, how can I best embody Reiki today? Or how can I live out such and such precept today? Or what sort of Reiki technique would support my personal wellness today? You get the idea.
Yep.
And then you create an action and take that action based on the insights you get from the card that you pick. I believe very much in embodying insights, like not just thinking, oh, gee, that reading was very cool, so what? You know, to me, you need to take action based on the energy and insight of the card that you receive.
Do you want to pull us
sure.
a card?
What's your question?
I've no idea. Pick based one for all of us.
For all of us. Okay, well, what would support us as Reiki teachers today? Let's ask that question. And I'm pulling
okay.
a card, and I'm getting the Queen of Cups reversed. And the Queen of Cups reversed as a way of I don't know, what, supporting ourselves as Reiki teachers today would suggest dealing with our inner emotions on a deep, mature level. It could be about honing our intuition to its finest, most expert point. So it almost suggests to me using techniques something like Reiji Ho or something like that, because which is a very intuitive kind of technique. And becoming really expert at that. So we can be good Reiki teachers today by practicing intuitive healing techniques, and any emotional things that come up from deep within us, we can deal with in an adult, mature kind of manner. So that's the card I got.
Thanks.
All right.
So what other techniques would you use?
Okay, so how else to incorporate tarot into a Reiki practice would be, if you're deciding to find a teacher or a practitioner that would best suit your personality and your needs. I would make a list of the potential teachers on paper, and I do this with my tarot clients all the time. We write everything down so we have a really concrete plan. I figure if we're clear, the universe is clear, right? So I would write down each teacher or practitioner's name, and then I would pull three cards for each person. And the questions I would ask, each spread position or layout position would have these questions. What is so-and-so's principal approach to Reiki? And then the second card I pull would be for how might I benefit from his or her approach? The third card I would pull would answer the question, what about his or her approach might I find challenging? And then the person could simply weigh these pros and cons and the other information to sort of sense within themselves whether the teacher or practitioner is going to be helpful to them. And, of course, weighing it along with your intellectual information. We don't throw our brain out the window. We weigh intuitive and divinatory information along with our intellect. We keep the little gray cells working, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did this for myself. If that's just before we went on, I pulled three cards for myself and was pleasantly surprised. And what I got for what is the principal my principal approach to Reiki, James's principal approach to Reiki, and I got the King of Wands. And the kings for me are about releasing or sharing or relinquishing or getting rid of or surrendering. And the upright wands, I say upright because a card, because the way we mix it, can look upside down or it can look right side up. And when it's upside down to me, it doesn't change the meaning of the card for me, but it changes the way it's expressed. So anyway, when upright wands for me can be about, you know, expressing energy outwardly. It can be about our public identity. It can be about who we are, our sense of independence even. So what's my principal approach to Reiki? The King of Wands would suggest it's about sharing of my own personal growth journey. It's about sharing the energy to anyone who really needs it and wants it. And it's about surrendering my ego at the door, you know, relinquishing you know, this ego person called James to the cause of Reiki. So I thought that was very cool, kind of a neat card to get. And the second card I pulled, how might somebody benefit from my approach? I got the Seven of Wands upright. I got all wands, by the way. And the Seven of Wands upright would suggest to me, the sevens have a sense of diversity and manyness and experimentation and expanding to them. And combined with the wands ideas I mentioned before, it says to me they would benefit from my approach because I've worn many identities in the Reiki world. I was first trained in a Western system. 2 years later, I trained with the TJR people, the traditional Japanese Reiki, who later became Usui-do. And then I trained as a teacher with Hiyako Teninomoto, so I'm also a certified Komyo Reiki teacher. And so if somebody comes to me with questions about a Western practice or an Eastern practice, I've worn the many hats. And I've experimented with different ways of interacting with the ki, and I've been there. So this is what this card suggests to me as a benefit for them. What about my approach might people find challenging? And I got the Page of Wands. And the pages for me are about risk-taking, daring, recommitting, leaping in, plus all the wand stuff I mentioned before, says that their challenge in working with me in a Reiki context could be that they would have to recommit to their personal growth. They would have to recommit to becoming themselves, that they would be invited to leap into working with the energy hands-on and dive in deep with it and no namby-pamby stuff. So those are the three cards I pulled for my own practice and as a teacher of Reiki, and I thought it was kind of encouraging.
Yeah, that's great. You know, when you're talking about how you feel that the cards say this and that, whether you're using cards or not, say that you're just working on yourself with Reiji Ho or with an intuitive practice, yeah, and you have all of a sudden ideas about your life and ways that you could change, how would you say to a client or a student that they are to trust that information?
It goes into the whole idea of surrendering our ego again, you know, because it's, I remember Inamoto Sensei saying to us that certainly with Reiki, less is more, and that getting our ego out of the way actually will cause more to happen. But then we have to detach from that whole idea too, that you know, when we get out of the way, Reiki can do its thing. And I think the same thing, if a student or a client is feeling or receiving or intuiting some information about their journey, you know, trust that and surrender for that moment. It's that for today only thing, you know, in this moment. Just surrender to that. And it's all part of that third precept, be humble, as far as I'm concerned. It's like realize that, you know, there are other depths of energy and awareness and knowledge that can assist us, and we don't necessarily have to always do it from the ego self. So all that to say, I would just say, trust it.
I know a lot of people have difficulty with that. Some people don't trust themselves. Some people trust themselves too much. You know, and it is trying to find that balance.
One litmus test I often give people about intuitive information is that real intuitive information has no emotional charge to it, or has very little emotional charge to it. If you feel really, really emotionally attached to the information, it's probably not intuition. It's probably emotion. And if you're feeling kind of like, that's interesting information, I wonder how I could apply that, if it makes you more curious, if it doesn't carry that same sense of having a vested outcome in something, then that's probably more accurate intuitive information. I don't know if that helps anybody or not. That's one of my litmus tests I often give to people and myself, remind myself.
Yeah. I guess a person's experience with that is what's going to be the key for them, isn't it?
It is. And certainly another thing I say is intuition is not in the head, it's in the body. That if it's making you think too much, it's probably not an intuitive hit. It's probably just monkey mind. If you're sensing that intuitive information in the body, you know, in the spine, in the hands, in the gut, it probably is more of an intuitive hit.
You talked in the beginning, actually, you used the word groundedness when we start the interview. Do you find that is very important with interpreting your intuition?
Absolutely. if we're not grounded, why bother? You know, certainly there are a lot of spacey intuitives and tarot consultants and Reiki practitioners out there. You know, it goes into the whole idea, which I know you talk about in your books and in your classes, the three diamonds, the three energy centers. You know, there's the tanden, the lower hara, if you want, which is the earth key, the earth energy. And I think that needs to be developed before we work on the heaven key, which is connected with, you know, the area around the brow. And there are too many people who want to work on the brow area, so-called third eye, and you know, become great intuitives and famous psychics and all this kind of stuff. And they just no grasp of their own life. You know, they don't know how to feed themselves. They don't know how to go shopping or whatever. You know, it's kind of funny to watch, but it's kind of sad too. Certainly, we just need to be grounded in any work we do, whether you're doing a treatment, whether you're teaching a class, whether you are doing a tarot consultation, whether you're performing a ceremony or ritual of some kind. Grounding simply means you're solidly connected to the earth beneath your feet, and you're completely present in this moment. You know, you're not wondering what if 3 weeks from now. You're not saying, gee, yesterday was a real screw-up. You're here. You're present. To be grounded is to be fully present in this body, on this earth, at this time.
Are there any techniques with the tarot that you use to help support that groundedness?
Yes. I would say it's the taking the concrete action. You know, journaling about a tarot card or journaling about a Reiki experience or whatever, and then creating a concrete, doable action in your real life based on that insight or that symbol or that feeling or whatever. You know, for instance, I'm just going to pull a card at random here from the Mother Peace Tarot. It's a round tarot deck based on feminist principles. And I'm looking here at the Moon card. And the Moon card in here, there's a woman wading out into the ocean, and she's hip deep in water, and there are energy things all around her, and the moon is above her, and there's a labyrinth appearing in the air before her. And so you've got all this going deep, wading deep into the self, wading deep into the psyche, and gaining guidance from deep within and from spirit. And I would look in the card for some kind of symbol or concept or indication of what could I do today or this week to really embody that, and what could I do that would help me dig in and find that inner wisdom. And I'm really drawn to the idea of the labyrinth in the center, you know. So maybe what I could do is go to the big labyrinth in downtown Toronto and do a walk and ritualize this card and see what comes up for me during that walk. Maybe that's where I need to wade into to get the information I deeply need. Grounding it in the real world.
Maybe it's you connecting to us. We've got a lovely labyrinth we built outside right here.
Ooh, brilliant. I'd love to see it.
You can always come here and walk the labyrinth here.
Oh, what a good idea.
And another question I have, can people actually choose the wrong card?
Ah, no. There's no such thing in my practice anyway as a wrong card. And I have, you know, tarot students who come to my beginner's tarot class that I offer, and you know, let's say they hem and haw over a card. You know, they hover their hands over it for 10 minutes, or they'll head towards picking one out of the pile, and then they'll pull a hand back and they go, what if it's the wrong one? And I finally just say, shut up. There's no such thing as a wrong card. And my whole idea behind this, and who knows, the philosophy may change in a year, but is that we can't pick a wrong card because every card depicts a human experience, and we're humans having an experience. And therefore, it's going to mirror our own journey and our own growth in some way. You know, the tarot contains everything about human life, and so you just can't pick a wrong card.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to relate to you in some way. It's kind of like a holographic experience, I think. I think every card, in a sense, contains the whole deck. You know, because I don't see any cards as good and inherently good or inherently bad. It's our questions that give us that context. You know, if I say, what's the worst thing I could do about such and such, then I'm going to interpret the card from a more challenging slant. If I say, what's the best thing I could do in such and such situation, then I'm going to come at it from a more constructive point of view. I try and avoid words like negative and positive, by the way, when describing those polarities, because they're very loaded for people. So,
yeah, that's right. How many card decks do you have?
Oh, God. well, I just moved recently, as you know, and moved house recently, and I had to pack many boxes worth. I would say 300 odd decks, give or take. I haven't counted them lately.
Can you give our listeners maybe a hint on how to work with a Reiki Techniques card deck?
Sure. I would say use it as you would the card a day in the tarot. Just, you can ask that question, what healing technique would support my wellness journey today? Or, and also maybe pull a card for what one don't I need today, and just see how they line up. You know, that might be one way of doing it. Certainly, a teacher could use it in a class setting and just maybe pick out the cards that are appropriate to that particular level that they're teaching and say, okay, now we're going to do this. You know, maybe they could plan a class around it or plan a weekend workshop around it. I certainly plan to use these cards in giving a one-day workshop on Japanese Reiki techniques that I don't always teach in my own levels 1, 2, 3, or 4 classes. So I might be tempted to pull a card out in a class and say, let's try something different. You all studied these 3 levels with me, and we've done these techniques. Let's extend our knowledge, and then have each person in the group pull a card, and the whole group can try it out, or that person can try it out and tell us and teach us their experience of it. So maybe there's some ways that come to my mind for using your particular deck. Even as a way of meditating, the pictures are wonderful in your Reiki Techniques deck, and I think they would be a great focus for meditation or even insight. You know, not reading the back of the cards with the instructions, but simply using the pictures as a tool for journaling or as a tool for getting intuitive insight. You know, for instance, I've got the deck right here, and I've got the potency card, and on this is a person who is breathing out of his mouth, and of course that's the Kokiho, breathing Reiki technique. But if we ignore that on the back, I mean, simply look at the picture, there's this cloud of breath coming out of this peaceful face and out of this person's mouth. Maybe it inspires people to ask open-ended questions in their journal. So maybe the picture would say, you know, how am I releasing fully like this breath? Or how do I find my potency in moments of peace, or that kind of thing?
Just before we go, I just wanted to ask, because I know that you like to teach in as traditional way as possible, I guess, from a Japanese perspective. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yet you talked about, you know, you'd start the weekend off with a tarot card or whatever. Okay.
Right.
So, just for people who are listening, because we often discuss about, you know, how do we educate people about what Reiki is, what do you say to people when you pull a card, for example, in a Reiki course?
Well, I would say something very simple, like many people know that another one of my great tools is the tarot, or one of my favorite tools is the tarot. This is not in the Reiki tradition, but this is something I find that people often find valuable to have an insight about the weekend that we're about to embark on, or something like that. I would introduce it and be very frank and say, you know, this is not Reiki, this is this, but it could provide us with some insight about our Reiki journey this weekend. So I'm very firm about this is not.
Thank you. I thought as much. Yeah. I just thought, you know, it's interesting for people to know that, and that it's great to, if you have experience in a different field that you feel will also support your Reiki classes or your Reiki practice, that, you know, of course it's fine to include that in if you're an expert in that field, especially, as long as you make people aware of that.
Absolutely. I believe in differentiating between, you know, this is this and that is that. You know, you get people who like to bring crystals and different archangels and stuff into it, and, you know, that all works. Their intent is good, but I really find that it dishonors both systems if you mix them. That's my own opinion. Not the opinion of the host of this show, necessarily. But your little disclaimer. But no, because for me, to add Reiki to crystals dishonors the system of crystals, and it also dishonors the system of Reiki, because each is complete in itself.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, James. James, before we actually completely finish off, you do readings online or by phone?
I do it by telephone or in person. So somebody's here in Toronto, I do private consultations with them. I tend to refer to it as a consultation, because the term reader tends to imply that I'm going to do all the work and that I'm going to sit here and blather at them. I tend to have an interactive approach whereby we dialogue with one another, with the cards as the focus for a conversation. But yes, I do offer those, and I also offer by telephone worldwide.
And how can people contact you? You've got a website?
I have a website, workeroforacles.com. Phone number is area code 416, then it's 966-2685. And I have two email addresses. One is workeroforacles@yahoo.ca. The other one is jwells_reiki@yahoo.ca.
Thank you, James. We've been truly blessed to have such an expert like yourself on the show. I think you'll really help a lot of people who are curious about tarot and Reiki and wonder what they can do, if they can mix them together, or even just people who are interested in tarot itself. I think you gave a really great, simple explanation of where it comes from without too much myth.
It's been a pleasure, and part of my work, I feel, is to try and demystify some of these tools. Because certainly there's a lot of cosmic foo-foo out there about Reiki and tarot and so forth. Israel Regardi used to use that term. He was a wonderful ritual magician and psychologist, and he used to refer to all that as cosmic foo-foo. And I see a part of my work as to dispel some of that foo-foo.
Great. Well, thank you. I think you did.
Thank you. It's been a terrific pleasure. Thank you for inviting me to the show.
You're welcome.